Hey, everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. We want to remind you guys, all you listeners out there, that we are available on CairoRadio.com and also on the all-new Cairo Radio app for your smartphones and your tablets. You can go to the Android Marketplace or you can go to iTunes and download the Cairo Radio app completely free, and you can stream this show amongst many, many others and stream live radio, mind you, here from Seattle, straight to your little device, your little handheld device. And it's completely free, guys. Completely free. It's awesome. Go do it. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 166, in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom indeed, folks. Hey, we've got a fantastic show that will probably turn out epically long because he's already been here in Backyard Studios for like 2 hours. We were supposed to start like, like 2 hours ago?
Well, yeah, one. We were supposed to, an hour and 40 minutes ago. No, I guess 40 minutes ago.
This is what happens when you come over.
Yeah.
Epically long episodes. Well, we just end up bullshitting.
We had a pot of coffee. We downed that pot of coffee.
Don't forget the quesadilla. I made you a quesadilla.
Dude, that was good, too. What kind of cheese was that? Cheddar?
Best,
it was good.
Tillamook.
Nice.
New sponsor to the show, Tillamook Cheese, everybody.
We get free Tillamook.
Oh, man.
Amazing.
Would that be fucking great? I tweeted at them one time, and they tweeted back to me.
Wow. Tillamook Cheese.
Tillamook Cheese. Thinking about reaching out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marco Collins joining me in the backyard.
What up?
The new studio. Marco, you've got a lot of shit going on right now, dude, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. But I want to talk about my quesadillas really quick.
Okay.
Just for a little bit longer. I have got, so we live now in a new place, and we got this supermarket up the street from us called Central Market, right? And they've got the best tortillas in the world.
Were those tomato tortillas?
No, they were just like a wheat? Thick flour tortillas.
Oh, they were good.
And they make them fresh right there, and you can go and you can grab samples of them. Every time I go into that supermarket, I grab like a handful of like free samples. They're fresh and warm. And it's amazing.
Wow, they give you free samples. Smart place. Smart place. I think I'm going to move up here just
marketing
for that.
Geniuses.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Marco Collins. Let's see. Let's go down the laundry list here. Former host of The Young and the Restless of 107.7.
Funny you bring that up. Yeah, go on. Go on.
Let's see. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame DJ. Right?
That's what they tell me.
Yeah?
That's what they tell me.
You heard about that, right?
I did hear about it.
You got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I still haven't been there to see it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's not like I was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I represent one of two people from Seattle. And this is where I think people get confused, too. It's not like Casey Kasem has been inducted.
Wait a minute. There's the door. You show yourself out. I thought you were inducted.
No, I've never been inducted. And I never have said I've been inducted. People write that because they think if you're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that you've been inducted.
Yeah.
Casey Kasem has been inducted.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not. Wolfman Jack has been inducted. Right. I'm not that guy. Dick Clark. Yeah. I am in a like this sort of representation. They have an exhibit where DJs are represented who have done substantial things in their careers, and I'm one of two people representing Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who's the other DJ?
Pat O'Day.
Oh, no shit.
From the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's still alive today, a good friend of mine. And it's funny because whenever we are together, people are like, oh, my God, it's the two inductees, and we both look at each other and just smile. Yeah. Yeah. We're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but it's not like there was a big ceremony, you know, and Hart played and next to us.
Yeah, totally.
It wasn't
that
kind of thing. There was no party. No accolades other than, hey, you're in here. Congratulations.
That's got to be pretty cool, though, right?
It is. Absolutely. I'm not downplaying it. Oh, it was awesome, man. They had me create. I had to create a sample of what I'd done. Okay. And it had to be a minute 30.
Now, we were just talking off air. We were just talking about how bad of editors we both are.
Yeah, exactly.
On these programs that we do here. And so how did that go?
Oh, I absolutely didn't do it. I created it. Here's what I did. I figured, okay, if you're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and you've never heard of me, if you're a family from Arkansas who happened to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame going through the museum.
Are you going to walk up and press the button to hear that?
You're going to, right. What would make people excited about pressing my button? And so I figured, you know what? I'm not going to give them an air check of like, oh, some of my best witty moments. I'm going to put together the 90s for them on my show.
There you go.
But it's going to be Courtney Love. It's going to be Nirvana. It's going to be the people that I interviewed. It's going to be Weezer playing acoustic on my show. It's going to represent that time. So the first time that I went into the studio with Martin Fivier, and that's what I did. We sat in there probably for 8 hours trying to get my entire career whittled down to a minute 30, 90 seconds.
Oh my
so
God.
The first time I sent them one, it was 3 minutes because I thought, I'm just going to see if they'll take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was way too much to edit. And they wrote me back an email saying, what didn't you understand about 90 seconds? So I'm like, shit. So Martin and I went back in and we whittled everything down.
Yeah.
And it got to the point, honest to God, that we had to do tricks. Like, you know, I had this clip of a Foo Fighters interview I did. Uh-huh, and I'm like, what if we sped up the interview and then pitched it back down? So we're talking faster, but it's still in our voice.
Right, right.
And he's like, brilliant. So we actually did little tricks like that.
So
to
you used
be able...
a pitch shifter so it wouldn't sound like mice talking.
Right, so we didn't sound like little mice running around. Yeah. We brought our voices back down, but we sped up the interview.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's
we can play it right here. I have it for you.
It's funny, too, because... did you notice how I dodged that right there?
You don't want to play it.
I don't want to play that.
Fucker.
No, go to the fucking Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Press
the button and you can hear that. And then I had to pick a picture that would sort of be very grungy and...
Right.
You know,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So they give you... They're like, hey, we want to put you in this museum, but you got to do a bunch of work to do it.
Yeah. That's all right. I was honored, man. You know, the greatest thing about this is one of my dear friends is also kind of a big radio DJ, and he's not in it, and he hasn't been asked to be a part of it. So when he heard that I was doing it, he called me up and said, what's the email address of that guy? And I'm like, here it is. And, you know, and then I emailed the guy saying, get ready for this, dude, because he's going to come at you hard. Like, my friend literally pitched himself to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But wait, I've done this, and I've done this. He was rallying to get himself in. It was really, really funny.
That's fantastic.
And they didn't take it.
They didn't take it.
No, which I think is really funny. I mean, it makes me laugh.
Poor guy, though. Come on.
He's done great things in his life. He's done amazing things. And he's in my movie. So
he's
a dear friend of mine. I love him. It's just, it's so funny that he would pitch himself. But God, you know, I mean... People that are opportunists get places.
You're
working your butt off. Sometimes you got to be a selfless, shameless self-promoter to get anywhere. So.
I do that as well. Yep. Email me at aaron@air-raid.net. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, people.
Maybe you should send the guy from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame like just a little sampling of your show.
I'm just going to send him a short email. It's going to say, hey, follow me on Twitter.
How funny would it be if Aaron got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and my friend didn't?
Yeah.
After years and years.
You'd have to give me your friend's name and email so I could be like, hey, guess what?
Oh, my God. It's so funny. I'm honored to be in that thing. I joke about it. I'm honored, and I'm honored to be next to someone like Pat O'Day, who I have so much respect for.
Too.
That guy, that man is a genius.
Well, and for those who don't know who Pat O'Day is, too, Pat O'Day is a legend in Seattle for being kind of the radio DJ in the 60s that would get interviews and talk with and have on the air like people like Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles.
He broke all the bands from the 60s that I did from the 90s. Like, he helped... I think Jimi Hendrix, he might have managed Jimi Hendrix for a minute.
He told a story recently, I think it was on Cairo too, about how, I think, was that him? Who he met Jimi Hendrix when he was playing for Little Richie. Or wait.
I think he met him way before that. And really? Here's why. He knew him when he was 16, dude.
That's when he was playing for Little Richard.
I don't think so, no? man. I don't think so. Right? Maybe, I don't think that that's correct. It might have happened after that, but all I know is that the story that stands out for me with Pat O'Day, and the reason it stands out is I can identify with this. People can actually understand this. Pat promoted shows and concerts in town. He was a concert promoter.
That's right. I forgot about that.
You kind of do everything in those days. You're a concert promoter. Yeah. You manage bands. You work on the radio. Mm-hmm. So Pat promoted shows at a venue. I forget what it was called. And he would bring in these national acts. Yeah. And he told me that Hendrix was just this sort of kid out in the back who he couldn't get in, or he couldn't afford to get in, or I can't remember what it was, but he would show up. He wanted to play so badly that he would show up in his truck with his amps in the back of the truck and just sit there and be like, hey, listen, if anything happens, you need anybody, I just want to play. Right, I don't want to be on stage. You can put me off stage. I just want to play. And he said that what used to happen in this particular venue is they'd blow the amps. So Hendrix knew this. Hendrix brought his amps and just sat there waiting for the moment one of these amps blew. And then they'd come to him and say, dude, we need your amp. Hendrix would hand over his amp and then be like, hey, but you know the rules. I got to play with the band.
What?
And so they would put Hendrix behind the curtain.
I never knew that.
And Jimmy would just sit there and play with whatever big act. So bands probably unknowingly had Jimi friggin' Hendrix playing with them as a kid.
That's insane.
Isn't that a great story?
Dude, that's huge, too.
So think about the kind of people that we know today that are that age. And this is where sometimes DJs drive me freaking crazy. Like, sometimes you can just be too cool for the room.
Right.
You have to be open to find that talent. Like, who is that kid today? I'll tell you what. For me, that kid is an annoying, in your face, like constantly bugging.
He's Jimi Hendrix. He's showing up with his aunt.
Sending me Facebook emails every 2 minutes. That's the kid, dude. And what bums me out, and I'm just going to say this really quickly. I don't want to incriminate anybody. Radio stations that ignore that audience.
Right.
They close their doors to those people that make it difficult to get their records played, whether it's a local show or a station that plays local bands, are idiots. Total friggin' idiots. You are an idiot. If you close your door, your door to those geeky kids, one day that geeky kid is going to be Hendrix.
Yeah.
And I know there are stations in town that make it so difficult and treat you like shit if you come in and you don't look the right way, or if you start email campaign that pisses off the DJs, you know, asking your fan base to email the station requesting. You've got to forgive youth. You've got to forgive youth and embrace it and help it.
I like
and
that.
And I just see radio stations that piss me off that I'm like, you've made fun of this kid. You've made fun of his band. Uh-huh. You won't play him on the air because he started an email campaign to get you to play his record. Big fucking deal. Ignore it.
You're getting worked up.
You know why?
You're working yourself up.
Because I can think of three people who have suffered.
Did I give you too much coffee?
Yeah, I'm a little fired up. No, I mean, honest to God, dude, it's like, you know, I just think it's a mistake. And I think that there's brilliant radio stations in town that are making mistakes.
Is that why back in the day you started the show Young and the Restless?
No, it's not. I started the show The Young and the Restless because we have a great local music scene and we need to be playing it.
Yeah.
I just had a different attitude towards things. I don't ignore those kids.
Yeah.
You don't ignore those kids. I sat in a career day thing the other day and I had like seven kids come up to me, and you know, when you're young, you can kind of be overkill sometimes. You make mistakes, but you've got to forgive youth.
Yeah.
Forgive them for what they don't know. If they screw up and make a mistake, help them make the right decision next time.
Yeah.
But don't ignore their art and help them along, man. And it's, I just see other stations in town who shall remain nameless, who are doing brilliant things, that are making those mistakes and making fun of young kids who are screwing up.
Well, it'll always happen. It's always going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Stop it.
I'm probably a little bit part of the problem, I guess.
Stop that. Here's why.
I'm not saying that I get like annoyed at stuff, but like Hold on. If there's a band that sends me like a whole like list of music,
yeah,
you know, I'm going to listen. I don't have every hour of every day to kind of go through like a whole album.
No, of
two
course
albums.
Not.
And so if I listen to like a couple tunes and they don't grab me, then, you know, I'm sorry, man, but.
Yeah, that's fine.
I can't.
You gave them the time.
Yeah,
but
I give everybody the chance.
That's all it needs is, yeah, you've given them the time of day. I mean, there's lots of bands I didn't like. I was in a position where I had to say no to a lot of people, but I would say no by calling them and explaining to them why.
Well, you always have to, you know, you don't want to shit on somebody's dreams or shit on somebody's hard work. Too.
Right.
I mean, like making an album is very, very costly one.
Yeah.
And I mean, you put your heart and soul into that. I don't care who you are.
Right.
But if it's not right for somebody's show, then that's it.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, like there are certain types of music that I do not play on this show.
Sure.
Reggae. Because reggae is
if
like,
it's not your thing.
Reggae is like Satan dipped his balls in a pile of like weak old dog shit. That's what reggae is.
You got to move to Southern California. Reggae doesn't work when it's in the rain.
No.
Reggae works when it's the weather is beautiful and it's a completely different vibe. But you've heard Core Ions. Do you not like that stuff?
I don't know if I've heard that.
Local reggae guy. I love him.
I don't know. No.
Blue Scholars have worked with him a little bit. He's awesome. One of the only
reggae. I feel
a little
bit better about it now.
Yeah, one of the only reggae guys that we have up here. I'll probably get emails from other folks that are doing it, but one of the guys that's doing it well.
Uh-huh.
His name is Core Ions, he's got his little band and crew, and you know the hip hop. He's definitely a part of kind of involved in the hip hop community as well.
Gotcha.
And Gio from the Blue Scholars has laid down vocals on tracks, and he writes songs.
He writes songs
that can stand on their own, and he's amazing. But, you know, again, this is a beef, and thank you for letting me get this beef off my shoulders. You know, there's another band in town that I think are on their way to being brilliant.
Uh-huh.
They're not brilliant yet. Their singer is brilliant.
Yeah.
They're being blacklisted from a station in town.
Do you want to say who they are?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't want to say who they are, and I don't want to say who the station is.
Okay.
But I feel like the station's making a mistake with this one, and that they need to embrace this band because this kid, whether it's with this band or not, this kid's going to be a big deal, has the potential to be a big deal, and he's being blacklisted because apparently on his last record, He did one of those things where on the internet he asked his fan base start emailing this radio station, and it pissed off the DJs and it pissed off the music director, and he feels he's being blacklisted because of that, even though he's gone from 0 to 60 on his new record. And I just, you know, I mean,
that's too bad.
It is too bad. And God, you know, I will say this. God, I really don't want that. I don't want that.
I'll beep it out.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
No worries.
I don't want to pick any fights. I honestly respect them for so many other reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just these little things just bother me because I think it's something
that you've tried very hard.
You've
put a lot of time. And for those of you listening who don't know who Marco is, but Marco is...
Or care.
It's like, who is this guy who just starts a... He comes on the Air Raid podcast. He just lays into it.
He just goes for it. He's an angry guy. I'm pretty fired up on that freaking coffee.
Marco is also a legend here in Seattle for basically, I don't know, would you say kickstarting the grunge era almost? Or just bringing a lot of those bands into common knowledge, maybe.
I think maybe it's more of that.
Helping
you know,
with that?
Like working on this movie right now. A million different people are talking about what I did then.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, it was really being in the right place with the right attitude at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And I lucked out with a lot of those things. And, you know, there were a lot of bands that needed to have that airspace. And to see if they were going to be brilliant or not. And there were bands that we broke on the end back in the day locally that didn't take off nationally.
Right.
But we made them superstars here in town.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of the fact that when I sat down with the end, you know, most stations had these program playlists. You had to only add major label bands. To me, I just thought, play everything if it's good. Who cares if it's on an indie label? Or if it's on a cassette that some kids, 15-year-old kids from Gig Harbor sent you.
Yeah.
I did both. Totally.
Yeah.
And it paid off in a big way because, you know, it's kind of like finding the talent. You've got to really open up your spectrum. You've got to be open, again, to those little kids, that little kid that's pulling up in his truck with the amps. Like, you've got to forgive those kids when they make mistakes.
Yeah.
You've got to embrace them. You've got to be able to hear some glimmer of hope there, too. And that's something that I've always sort of tried to do, is just hear beyond the crappy production that they did in their basement.
Yeah.
Like, be able to hear that these kids can write a song.
Uh-huh.
They know that, you know, they know the song structure and those harmonies. Like, if you put them into a real studio, how would that song sound?
Right, right.
And I think, you know, I wish there was a tiny bit more A&R going on in radio these days. But
yeah.
I think that a lot of companies have forgotten that. That's why I don't
know. Well, it's definitely, I mean, times are changing too. And this is what we were talking about off air, is like, you know, with the influx of social media and social marketing and podcasts and, you know, people being able to, you know, do these things on their own much easier now. There isn't a lot of, because a lot of the funding for all that stuff has gone away because people can do it on their own. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, maybe that plays into it as well.
I think so. I think, you know, for commercial radio stations, it's just, you know, in the 90s, alternative music was a really big deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So those stations blew up.
Well, it also,
and there
became,
was a lot of room to take risks.
Yeah. Yeah. But it also, I mean, the whole 90s movement, maybe we should save this for a little bit later in the conversation, but like after, what was it, 99, 98, maybe like starting in 97, 98, 99, when like bands like, I don't know, Limp Bizkit were coming.
I knew you were
going to
say that.
You knew I was going to, because that's the one, right?
Right,
that's the one that everybody refers to. But, you know, bands like that were coming up and stuff and kind of, you know, making that whole like alternative grunge scene into this massive marketable entity almost, right?
It was a massive marketing entity way before that.
Right. But did you think, I mean, from my perspective, the music didn't reflect that as much as it did later on.
Explain that. I don't understand what you're saying.
Like, I felt like...
Music
like,
got shitty then.
Yeah, yeah, music got shitty.
Right.
Right? That's all I'm saying.
But
I was trying to say it a little bit smarter.
Tell me
or sound
you didn't smarter. Like Significant Other from Limp Bizkit. Tell me you didn't own that album.
I didn't.
You didn't own that album?
No, no.
You didn't like Nookie.
No.
You didn't like Break Stuff.
Nope. Nope.
Come on, dude.
Oh, you just pulled your cord out.
Oh, well. It's worth it.
Oh, God, you got it on your computer.
I
look
love
that.
This
called
record.
It up.
I got
get
the whole
that
album,
shit,
dude.
Get that shit off
I
my microphone.
Hold on, hold on, hold on.
See, I've never even heard this before.
What?
I've never even heard
I don't
that
even
song
know
before.
Who you are. This record this record is a good record. Here's the thing. I was actually in New York when this record came
okay.
out.
Okay.
And there was a vibe around this band. Yes, it got douched out. It
yeah,
was,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
the whole scene got overridden by this jock mentality. This
he wears motocross gloves when he sings.
But at the time, that was fucking badass. And this record, I loved it, dude. And you know why I liked it? I actually liked it because I thought they were really great songs. And when I used to run, I used to run in New York, I'd plug that in and it would like get me the whole way. Like, I loved it. When this record came out, I loved Limp Bizkit. Now, it continued to get watered down and douchier and then the Nickelbacks started happening and, you know, the Creed started happening.
Were you the DJ when they called in? Were you that DJ? That was you?
What DJ?
Were you the DJ when you were talking to like Scott Stapp or somebody was talking to Scott Stapp and they were like, what do you think about, you know, all this stuff about how you guys are ripping off Pearl Jam? And he basically said, Pearl Jam's ripping off us or something to that.
Oh, I don't. I had no idea that ever happened. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
All I know is that there's a story in the movie about me and Creed, which is kind of entertaining.
Let's hold on to that. Let's go to our... Oh, you don't want to talk about it?
You know what? It's in the movie.
Okay.
It's sort of embarrassing.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about this movie. We got to talk...
When we come back, what are we doing?
We're going to a musical break.
Oh, what are we playing?
We're playing music off of your new movie.
Like what?
We're playing music, The Young Evils, Dead Animals.
Off of our new benefit show for the movie.
Benefit show.
Yes.
For the movie. Let's just leave that awkward silence in right there. Yeah. This is The Young Evils. Song is called Dead Animals, and we'll be right back with Marco Collins on the Air Raid Podcast. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back. That was Dead Animals by the band The Young Evils. They're going to be playing this benefit show for this new movie coming out. It's in production right now, The Glamour and the Squalor.
Yeah.
A documentary about our guest today.
Well, I'd like
Collins.
To think it's more than a documentary about me just because it makes me feel a little less lame.
You're like the Limp Bizkit of documentary movies.
That's awesome. I want to
Which
be
is
the
fine
Limp
because
Bizkit.
You'll love it, right?
Yeah. So it's it's questionable at best whether or not I'm going to love this movie. I decided when I made this movie that there wasn't much I was going to hold back.
Yeah, yeah.
But we also decided that we weren't going to go as low as we could. Like,
right.
You know, there's been some things that have happened in my life that are pretty edgy.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't go to the bottom of the basement.
You went to where you were comfortable.
We went to the stairs of the basement. No, I'm at this point.
Did you go to the stairs and like kind of look in just a little bit?
We peeked, but I mean, the thing is that my whole crew thought there is a level of debauchery mm-hmm. that we're willing to go to, but we want this film. If we went as low as this is so weird. So the bottom line is we don't go so low that
you're really selling yourself.
It's going to become a film that's about something completely different.
Right.
You know,
right.
when yeah. you are a drug addict, you tend to find yourself in situations that can be a little edgy for the mm-hmm. normal human being to understand. Yeah. We decided not to go there.
Yeah.
We go to some edgy spots. Don't get me wrong. There's some stuff that's very uncomfortable for me to talk about in this film. We went back to,
well, let's kind of set this up a little bit too, because I want to get a little bit more backstory on how this whole project came together.
Can we just real quick tell people about the benefit?
Oh yes, yeah. Please,
so
please.
We're getting off track. So basically, we're in the final stages of editing the film. We did an amazing Kickstarter and raised a lot of money to help us get through a lot of the shooting for the film. Thank you to everybody that was involved with that. That meant so much to us.
Yeah, and you can still donate. Too,
you
right?
can still yeah. donate, absolutely. So
I donated, people. Come on.
Thank
you,
Aaron.
Guys?
Thank
where
you, dude.
Where are you guys?
God, they've been there. They've been there. I mean, people really...
Oh, yeah.
People
yeah.
knocked it out of the park for us, and thank you so much. But this benefit that we're doing is helping us with finishing funds, which mm-hmm. basically means we're in the edit, and we hired this amazing editor, and he's not cheap. So basically, we
and you've got people, and let's mention too, you've got people like Mike McCready who's scoring the film.
Yeah,
that's Mike, pretty amazing.
What an amazing human being he is! I have a Pearl Jam story to tell you later that's going to make you smile. I just Pearl Jam has been amazing through this.
Considering.
Well, I'll tell you about that later.
Yeah, yeah.
So this benefit show we're doing is a very small space. It's at EMP, not in the Sky Church, but upstairs. It's
okay.
only 400 people.
Oh, nice.
You know, basically, this is helping us get the edit done.
And it's on October 11th. It's coming up on Friday.
Yes, Friday night. And the lineup is killer. These people have all signed on to, you know, to do this for us. Mary Lambert is headlining the show.
Uh-huh.
She, of course, the vocalist on Macklemore's Same Love Song.
Yes, yes.
A new single of her own out there as well, sort of her take on Same Love.
Yeah.
Called She Keeps Me Warm. Mary just sold out the Numos, and I was blown away.
Oh, dang, man.
Strings. Yeah. Unbelievable. Like, she does a version of I Am a Teenage Dirtbag. With strings. Do you remember that? Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Is
it, I am a teenage dirtbag.
Yeah. Anyway, blown away by how good the whole room is singing
at
the top of their lungs. Anyway, Mary Lambert on the show, the Young Evils that you just heard on the show, Sean Nelson, who used to be in Harvey Danger, is in The Long Winters,
totally.
Fences, who has not played here in Seattle for over a year. Year and a half, maybe 2 years. Yeah, he moved to New York. He just moved back. He's going to play. Nacho Picasso, one of my favorite rappers in town.
Yeah.
He's going to play. Ross Sion, who used to be in the band Common Market, has a new ambient hip hop project, and he and Daniel Blue from Moto Pony are going to do the first live performance of this stuff ever. This event. Tilson XOXO.
Love the Tilson.
This guy is like one of the best entertainers
the
in this scene.
Yeah.
He used to be in a band called the Saturday Nights back in the day.
So good.
Yeah.
That dropped my 45.
Yeah.
What's the song called? What's that song called?
I forget what it's called. I know the one you're talking about.
I love that song.
Anyway, he's playing IG88, one of my new favorite electronic kids. And this guy just makes like the kind of music I want my dreams to sound like.
Yeah,
he's amazing. And then we have Action Jackson from Fly Moon Royalty.
Mm-hmm,
he's going to be DJing old school
awesome.
Hip-hop. And then we have an art show. Peace Move from Mad Rad and Fresh Espresso is an artist. He's a painter, and his stuff is phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's going to have paintings there showing them.
And he made the show poster
he showed me
earlier.
I love this.
Super good.
I bought like three of his... you know, pieces of art. Yeah.
Do you happen to know what IG-88 is in reference to?
Yeah, it's
you
know a Star Wars. Yeah, I only know now.
Yeah?
I didn't know then. It's the...
I love it.
It's like,
he's a bounty hunter. He's
right.
a robot bounty hunter
right.
in the Star Wars universe. It's awesome. Okay, so let's hit it up. This is coming up
October 11th.
October 11th.
This Friday.
This Friday. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be there.
Awesome.
We're gonna have a great time.
I'm looking forward to it. All these bands. Well, there's a couple surprises in the mix too.
Oh yeah,
a couple little things that I can't talk about right now. That are gonna happen at the show that I'm looking forward to.
Shirt cannon. There's gonna be a shirt cannon
shooting out Limp Bizkit significant other CDs for everybody. Everybody gets one.
Right. Hot dog, water, chocolate, starfish albums that were all left over.
You know the names.
I know the names. Come on.
You owned one of them.
No, I did not.
Look at me.
I'm looking at you
now. You were geek enough to be a Star Wars geek, and you love all these other, like, you know, geeky things. Clearly, you were a geek. How can you not like the geekiest stuff ever? Was it too macho?
The geekiest stuff? What are you talking about?
Was it too macho for you?
It was too macho. It was way too macho.
Got it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got it. What were you listening to then? Give me your favorite records in 2001 to 2003.
2001 to 2003. I think I kind of backpedaled a bit. I was still listening to Elliott Smith, Pavement.
Okay.
Those types of bands. I was really into, like,
so cool.
I know.
Cool.
Oh yeah, and I did not hesitate to fucking tell people that the Strokes were, you know, corporate rock. You know, like,
you hated the Strokes?
Okay, I've gone back on that one. The Strokes are amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought they were supposed to be uncool.
Because they were on a major label.
They were on
why.
A major label. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You were too cool for the room, kid.
I totally was. And I've totally gone back on that. Good. But yeah, never been able to get into, like, the Limp Bizkit.
God, I love that first record. Loved it. Loved it. I think I went and saw him live. But then again, I also like Kid Rock then.
Are you serious?
Here's the thing. They're not records. Okay, so the Limp Bizkit record, I would listen to in my headphones when I went running.
Yeah.
The Kid Rock record, I never really
embraced.
You just
listen to Kid Rock when you get
in
fights?
No, but I went and saw, like, I got in fights. Dude. I just slap fights. Kid Rock, I went and saw him in New York. This is way before all that stuff got super douchey, though. Or maybe it was douchey and I was a douche. So I just remember going to see Kid Rock and thinking, this is one of the best live performances I've ever seen. Like, this kid is, like, crazy. But then again, I also had that guy's first CD when he was just, like, this little scrappy Beastie Boys kid with the big single called Balls in Your Mouth. And that's, you know, I remember that at the end. I mean, we would play that after the People's Choice Countdown late at night just because, like, where else would you be able to get away with that?
Right.
So,
I don't know.
So funny.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to look up that song because I remember the name of it.
I can find that for you.
Well, I want to...
You wouldn't think it was Kid Rock, put it that way.
Okay.
And he actually opened for the Beastie Boys a bunch. And he had short hair. He wasn't this sort of gun-toting, you know, new version of Ted Nugent. He was...
White trash.
He was this sort of... Well, he's always been white trash and proud of that, but that's not to be... Yeah, I don't look at that as being a negative. Like, when I think of some of my favorite musicians.
It worked.
Listen, Kurt Cobain didn't come from a household of money.
That's true.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Anyway.
Well, let's... I want to talk about this film a little bit more. Because, all right. So you guys are in kind of the editing stage, like we were talking about. The benefit show is coming up on Friday. I want to find out, like, what was the impetus to this film? Like, were you contacted, or was it your idea to do this?
My idea? No way, dude. It was not my idea. They contacted me.
Okay.
A couple of guys that had grown up listening to me.
Uh-huh.
Or one of the producers.
They from here in, Seattle? Oh,
well,
okay.
One of the guys was from... Where is he from? Tri-Cities.
Oh, okay.
Somewhere.
Okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
He didn't actually grow up... Eastern Washington. Yeah. He didn't grow up listening to me, but he would listen to me when he was in town with his parents coming to see his grandparents or something like that.
Yeah.
He would listen to me intermittently. It's a tough word to say fast.
It is.
Thank God I have coffee in my system. Anyway, he actually remembers things like hearing me play Sunny Day Real Estate for the first time, and it changed. That's one of his favorite bands still.
So, still to this day, one of mine, too.
Yeah. So for him to be able to get Jeremy Enoch in the film was a big deal. Oh, yeah.
I've been trying to get him on the show. It's
the first time Jeremy has ever done an interview, and he explained to me why he did it. And it made me really
has he ever done any radio interviews or anything?
Done radio interviews. Okay. Yeah, but he didn't ever want to be on camera.
Oh,
he just was super uncomfortable being on camera. Mm-hmm. He said no to doing this movie 3 times. And then on the 4th time, he was like, you know what? He's a very spiritual dude.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's a very intense dude. He is one of the purest artists that I've known in my life. And I mean is that he's sort of so unaffected by things like social media and things going on around him that he's getting lost in the mix. And it's like sitting down, we sat down and had coffee the other day, and there's some new things coming up that
He's got a fan page on Facebook, and he's been kind of hinting at a new project that's coming up and stuff like that.
Cool things coming up for
Jeremy. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too, man. And we sat down and talked, and he was like, you know, the reason I agreed to do this movie is because I realized I'd spent my entire career focusing on me and my art, and it was time to give back to somebody. And it was my way of saying thank you to you for what you did for me.
Well, that's cool, man.
And it was so friggin' awesome to have him say this to me. Yeah. And I was like, wow, dude, thank you very much. And at the time, I didn't care if I got thank yous from bands.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's nice to hear that stuff later. But at the time, I'm just so fired up and excited that I don't care if they hate me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if, you know, they will not come on my show. They will not. I don't care.
I'm playing
them anyway. If they hate me, oh, well, I'm going to play them. I'm going to make them famous. I'm going to make them money. And I'm going to do it for the right friggin' reasons.
Yeah.
And it's because they're a great band.
You're a purist. You're a music enthusiast purist.
It's just important to focus on the right stuff when you're in that position.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
when they came to you, though, with this idea, they wanted to do this movie with you. Are you like,
hold on.
Whoa, radio professional.
Can I take a call live on this podcast? Hold on one sec.
Sure. So to continue, like...
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. So they come to you. I mean, are you nervous about, like, the dark parts, too? I mean, we already talked about, like, you kind of going down and, like, kind of taking a peek into the basement of, you know, the bad spots, right?
Right.
The bad parts. Like... I mean, that's got to be kind of a nerve-wracking thing. We want to do this movie about you, and we're going to be talking about everything.
Well, when they first came to me, that wasn't the idea. I mean, they definitely were smart in their pitch.
Uh-huh.
Because they came to me initially, it was going to be a look at the Seattle music scene from 91 to 97 as seen through my eyes. Fine, I'm in.
Yeah.
Then
I actually remember that. I remember you put telling me about it before it was going to start, because we did a show with you a long time ago.
Yeah. How long ago was that?
I don't know. It been a year? I meant to look it up.
Yeah.
I didn't remember to. But I think it's been like maybe a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Yeah. It's
because it was right before you guys started filming for it, I think.
Right. It's, you know, and it's continually evolving. My producer or my director, Mark Evans, he and I got into this conversation the other day, which he and I, anytime you're involved with people on a creative endeavor, you're going to...
You're going to butt heads a little.
You're going to butt heads.
Right? Yeah.
And for the most part, his creative vision for this is brilliant.
Uh-huh.
For the most part. Listen to me say that. There's just things that I want to make sure are intact in the film.
Here's my biggest
worry about this film.
Uh-huh.
And I'm only creating more buzz by saying this, but I fear that it was going to be about Pearl Jam and Nirvana and all these great bands and Sunny Day and this and blah, 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 blah.
The biggest bands that came out of the 90s that everybody knows about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I fear that they found more in my story that they decided was worth making a movie more about me as a person than the scene at that time.
That's really interesting, though. So this thing has kind of evolved into being just another 90s movie or 90s documentary into like, whoa, look at this guy's life. I mean, does it feel that part?
And I fear that part because
that's what I was just going to ask you.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, they're not showing me anything because I'm way too critical.
Right.
I mean, I ran into Mike McCready, who's scoring the film, Pearl Jam's guitar player, the other day at Cheap Trick, and he walked up to me and started smiling. And I'm like, what are you?
Because he's
He's seen a ton of it. He's writing music to the scenes about me or with me in them. And I'm like, what? And he's like, I just feel like I know you better than I've ever known you before. And I'm like, well, obviously you do if you're seeing scenes. And I guess he's written to some pretty intense scenes in the film. It makes me feel naked, dude. It makes me feel vulnerable and weird and naked that Mike McCready's smiling at me. And then he's like, I'm like, dude, I'm really nervous that you're smiling at me. And he's like, okay, calm down. Listen to me. And I'm like, I'm going to freak out when this frigging thing comes out.
Yeah.
And he was like, trust me. This is a great story. I am your friend. I would tell you, of course you're going to pick it apart. Of course you're going to think this and think that, but this is a beautiful story. And I'm like, at least hearing him say that made me relax a little bit. They won't show it to me, dude. I can't even see. Okay, so here's something that's happening at this benefit.
Yeah.
Three major scenes are being shown.
And like, you haven't seen these
yet. You have no idea. We're showing like 15 minutes of the friggin' movie.
Holy shit.
And it's stuff I have not seen.
I would be in knots over that.
I'm a little bit freaked out by it because I'm going to be seeing it at this benefit for the first time with everybody else. Yeah. And then people stare at you like they want to see what your reaction to your own movie is. Like, and I'm nervous, dude. The whole thing is nervous. First of all, I'm the most nervous person in the world anyway. So let's amplify that by making a movie about the weirdness.
Here's what I see happening is that you're going to have like you're going to be so nervous that you're going to just be downing coffee. Like, this is what I see. This is what my prediction. You're going to be downing coffee on Friday.
I'm not going to need coffee
all day.
If we're organizing this benefit, I'm kind of...
You're going to be all over the
place. I'm not stage manager, but I'm organizing the times, when people are going on, so the DJs, blah, blah, blah.
Right, okay, so you're working on this thing. You're doing it
I don't
as
need
well.
Coffee at that point. Okay. If I drink coffee, then I turn into a total weirdo. It's way too
much. Well, that's what I saw happening. Dude. Like, you just have like five cups of coffee, and then you'd show up, you'd just be twitching all over the place, just nervous wreck.
That's me, dude. Yeah. So I won't have coffee. I won't have Red Bull. See, Red Bull's my enemy. Even sugar-free Red Bull, not good for somebody as hyper as me.
Yeah. Zero carb rock star. That's my,
can't
my jam.
Do it. I love it. Jam. I mean, it's the next best thing to cocaine, and it's not considered breaking your sobriety by drinking a rock star. But then the next day I'm a total I'm hungover. Those things are hard for me.
Oh,
I normally do it when I need that extra kick on events like this.
Yeah,
but
then
I wake up in pain. Like my shoulders are all in knots. My neck is all in knots.
Well, that's not right. That's not right. Sue that company.
God, if I could.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
The benefit's going to be awesome. The movie is going to be awesome. It's just definitely going to be, although we're not going to the bottom basement, saving that for the book, it dips down into some areas that people are just going to know who I am after that.
I know,
kind of a weird thing. Like, think about some of your stuff. People are just going to know who I am.
Right.
And that's a little weird.
Yeah.
So there.
Another awkward silence.
Yeah.
Right there. Let's go to a second musical break here.
Okay.
I think this is a great spot. We're gonna play Fences.
Oh,
we're gonna be at the
guys.
I keep on wanting to call it a benefit show.
Is it?
It's a benefit show. Okay,
for the movie. A benefit for the glamour and the squalor. Mary Lambert, Sean Nelson, Fences, IG88, Tilson, XOXO, local hip hop from Nacho Picasso. That guy's like on his way. He's doing a show with MTV. That's what I've seen, man. You know, he was almost going to be in New York this Friday.
Now, is he's a Seattle guy too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ah, that's cool. That's cool. Okay, this is Fences, My Girl the Horse, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. With special guest this week, Marco F.N. Collins, who is a huge fan of Limp Bizkit. This is Fences. Love to talk to Mike McCready. I want to try to get him on this show too. But yeah, I was never that big of a Pearl Jam fan.
So the story is, I mean,
yeah.
Are we rolling?
Yeah, we're rolling, man.
Oh, so we're on now?
We are on. Okay. Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah.
That's my best radio voice. I do it like a 1930s like newsboy. Hey everybody, we're back. We're back on the show.
All right. Yeah. fair enough.
I told you I was wired after that second cup of coffee.
I know. You had two. I had one, and now this is the most caffeinated episode of all time. No, I mean, it's been really awesome. Pearl Jam, management, band, everybody has been amazing with this film.
That's great.
And the weird thing about that is back in the day, there were two camps, right?
Yeah.
There was Nirvana and there was Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam, yeah.
And I was kind of a Nirvana guy. It took me a long time. This is really funny. Took me a long time to embrace Pearl Jam. Not a long time. I just wasn't a fan of the first record.
Right.
That blew up. I was a fan of the second and third records. Those are the records that mean the most to me from Pearl Jam.
Okay.
You know, Versus and Vitalogy. I was going
to
say.
Was that the third one? Was Vitalogy the third record?
Yep, yep.
Oh, I thought, okay.
Or wait, was Vitalogy the second one? Whatever.
No, no, no. Two. Versus was the second. I think it goes 10 Versus. And
where
then...
did Revolver come in? No.
What?
Exactly. Anyway, it was the second and third album that I embraced Pearl Jam, I wasn't that big a fan of the first record.
Right.
And there's a scene in the movie where I'm talking about that, and MacReady apparently was sitting with my director and looked at my director as I was saying this and said, he's being really nice. He's already told me he hated us and that he thought we sounded like Bad Company. And I'm and my director tells me this, that MacReady said this to him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, under what circumstances would I have told the guitarist of Pearl Jam that I hated his band? Under what circumstances? I'll tell you what circumstances.
Oh, shit.
I had to have been effed up.
I can't
fathom that I would have told it, been comfortable enough around him to tell him. This is what I will say. This is what I will say. Uh-huh. That band has been amazing to us on this film. Kelly Curtis, their manager, has given us footage from Pearl Jam 20 that was not used in the film.
Oh, cool.
Mike is scoring the film. Other band members hopefully are going to be in the film. It's just, this band has been amazing.
Yeah.
And considering I just feel like a dick. That's the whole thing. I feel like a dick. These guys are killer people.
Is there anything in your past that you would because being in the business that you were in, I'm sure that you probably were a dick a couple times. Not intentionally.
Oh, I'm
But there's anything that you were that you look back on your career and you're just like, fuck, I wish I didn't do that.
Early on, you learn a lot of lessons about how to deal with people. I mean, that's why I guess I'm pretty forgiving of people that make mistakes, is because I am the king of making mistakes and hopefully learning from them at one point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I made a lot of mistakes, whether it was business mistakes, whether it was, I mean, once I kicked the president of Atlantic Records out of my office and banned her from the radio station, and not the smartest thing to do. I thought I was very kicky or very kicky. I was very, no more coffee. I was very cocky.
Yeah, yeah.
And she, you don't do that to people in business. I learned, and you know what? She thought it was the funniest thing in the world because clearly she could squash me with the bat of an eye.
Right.
And she did not hold that against me.
Who is this DJ think he is?
He's just music director of this, I'd been in the job maybe 3 years. This woman ran Atlantic Records.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a dumb mistake. And that's funny. I just thought of that. That was dumb, embarrassing. I would, you start to think that your shit doesn't stink, especially when you're successful and doing a great job at it.
Yeah.
Did
that really go to your head too? Did the success in Seattle kind of
inflate the ego a bit? I'm sure you could find people that would say absolutely it went to his head.
Do you feel personally that it did though?
I'm proud of the work I did.
Yeah.
I'm proud of the work that I did. And honestly, becoming cocky is more, it has to do with being confident. There's a fine line between confidence and cocky. Cocky to me is when you're showing off.
Right.
I tried not to do that, but I'm sure that I did that. And I'm sure that you could find a line of people out the door that would say, what a prick.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to find those people for the movie right now because we don't want the movie to just be a fluff piece. It's certainly not a fluff piece. There's people that weren't fond of the way I did business. That weren't fond of my style of radio.
Yeah.
That weren't fond of, whatever. I think for me, it just got to the point that I really, when I came into the gig, I challenged a bunch of the norms. And I said, I'm not doing things this way. I'm not doing things that way. I'm going to try this because I believe it can work this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And at that point, maybe you do get a little cocky. Maybe you do get, you know, maybe I got a little cocky. Maybe I just, I started thinking, I don't trust anybody else but my vision on this because it's working. It's working. And,
right.
But that doesn't mean I wouldn't take advice. And there were people in the industry that I trusted, record labels that I trusted, people that came to me, Deb Lippitz from Epic Records, mm-hmm. Jim Anderson from Warner Brothers Records, you know, Julie Ray McLeod from Island Records. There are people that had our back, mm-hmm. that believed in us as a radio station. And, you know, those are people you kind of got to, you got to wear the iron though. Because everybody wants to influence what you're doing.
Right.
You know,
right.
When you're music, when you're a radio station that's successful, everybody wants their records on your station. Every label, whether they're stinkers or not. And whether they're handing you the crappiest song in the world or not. And that's not to say that I didn't miss the boat, like on songs. That's the question to ask me. Like, you know, yes, I hit it out of the park sometimes,
uh-huh.
but that doesn't mean that there weren't those that I just missed that I'm a little
embarrassed.
What did
you? What
did
you miss?
I'll tell you what I missed.
Yeah. Give me a big one. Give me a big one.
Just a Girl. No Doubt.
No Doubt.
I hated that damn woman's voice. I thought it was Betty Boop,
you know,
singing.
Who?
And I was like, who? This sucks. I'm not playing this. And
so it's
dug
so funny.
My feet into the ground for a little while. And then I met Gwen, and then we became friends. And then I started, like, the record blew up. And I'm like, you know what? I get this now. I still struggle with the sound of her voice. But then I saw her live, and mm-hmm. I'm like, this, she's a friggin' rock star.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this woman is beyond star.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm in. I'm
I
in.
Owned, after, I owned that record.
I mean, but when I first heard that, I didn't know what she looked like. I didn't know anything about her. I hadn't seen a video. And
yeah,
I was just like, oh, can't deal with this. Another one that I missed, and this is just Alanis Morissette. You ought to know. I
what?
Thought that was the biggest piece of crap I'd ever heard. I thought, and then
was it big for like a radio station to miss out on something like that? Did that matter all that much if you didn't play?
It kind of affects your track record a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, like, you know, everybody's keeping score. At
least
I'm keeping
score
in my head. You know, how many hits I actually, I'm sure it's the same in baseball. you know what I mean? Like, I'm equating it to sports.
We could set up a fantasy league for DJs.
Dude, there is one. There was one.
Are you serious?
Air, yeah. And so what it was is this company would come to you and they'd ask you to rate all these different records. What do you think? How far do you think it can go? And then the whole country, all people like you around the country, our music directors everywhere are all in the game, and you can win $15,000.
What?
But I refused to do it because I felt like, bullshit, you're paying me to take my information back to record labels and use it against me.
Yeah,
hell
yeah.
No, I won't go. So I wouldn't play the game, and they kept coming to me saying, you know, you could probably win this thing. And I was like, I'm not doing it. I am too idealistic. Now I'm kicking myself. I could have made $15,000,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, I could have had 15.
But here's the thing. If I, you know, there's all those games, whatever. I mean, to me, you know, missing those records, this is key when you make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Acknowledging that you made a mistake and putting it behind you and stepping up to the plate.
Yeah.
That's what I tried to do. I had to do that with Candlebox because they became huge. I did not want to play Candlebox. I fought Candlebox. But, dude, there comes a time when it's not Marco's personal jukebox.
Yeah, yeah.
I would
That's
like
true.
It
That's
to
true.
Be.
Yeah.
I would like it to be, but it's not. And the moment that you acknowledge that and move on, that you are creating great radio for people, not you. And now maybe you can lead it, but it's not for you.
Yeah.
It's for an audience. And very quickly, I learned what my audience liked and what my audience didn't like. And I probably sort of, you know, my own personal style. I got, you know, okay, here's something that I tried to champion that never really got, it never got off the ground back then. But
Queensryche?
No. they weren't my deal. Electronic music. I remember I went to London. I went record shopping. I, you know, the grunge thing had gotten tired. The indie rock thing had gotten tired. I was looking for something more. Like, if we're going to be a radio station that presents new and dynamic sounds to our listeners mm-hmm. and continues to evolve, we got to evolve. So what is happening next? And I went to London and I bought a crap load of CDs and I brought them all back in vinyl. And I was like, I went to my first rave. I'd been to a rave before, but only to take like a crap load of drugs here in the States.
Yeah.
It wasn't to dance. It wasn't to feel anything. It was more just to take drugs.
Yeah.
So it was the party with your friends.
Right.
Over there, it's about the DJ. It's about the audience. And mm-hmm. all I know is that I was in the middle of a concert by a record label called Planet Dog. They were really big at the time and some amazing DJs and performers. And when I had this epiphany that, oh my God, this is the same. I am in the middle of this crowd and my heart is going through my chest. Yeah. I'm getting like chills with the build of the song. And then the whole audience with their arms in the air. I'm like, it's the same as being in a pit at a Nirvana show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same, or a Mudhoney show. It's the same feeling. So why can't this work in the States? And I remember thinking, God, I'm in heaven. I found something and I'm in it. Like, I am there. And so I brought all these records back, tried to play them on the radio. Some of them worked, some of them didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the Seattle Times writing this column dissing me. Like, just how dare he try to cram this down our throats? You know, he stops down and goes on a tirade about electronic music and what it's going to mean and all this stuff. This writer tore me a new asshole.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember thinking, I'm getting beat up over this and I don't care. I'm still going forward with it. But I mean, not a lot of radio stations would give you that freedom at the time.
Well, you were like, what year was that?
Well, at that point, it was like 95, 96, maybe even 97 when I started like really.
Holy smokes. So you were like maybe, I don't know, 10 years, almost 15 years ahead of the curve on that then.
Yeah, almost, but right? It was
when
going
did Crystal
on that.
When did Crystal Method really come out?
Well, they those were kind guys, of the... we played them on their first single. And guys ended up becoming two of my best friends. We played them. I had a guy that I worked with named Brian Beck,
uh-huh.
and he had worked with me since he was 17. Now he's working in management for Death Cab's management company. He worked at MTV.
Oh, okay.
This kid has had an amazing career.
Yeah,
he's kicking my ass right now. Let's put it that way. He worked under me from the point that he was 17 on. I gave him his first turntable
uh-huh.
to just say thank you for working for me.
Oh, cool.
So his first 1200 Techniques 1200, and I just surprised the hell out of him for his birthday. I'm like, bam, take this, learn this, because this is your future. And at one point, he started promoting rave shows, right? Uh-huh. And one of the first shows he did featured the Crystal Method. They had only had one 12-inch out.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's have them on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
This sounds amazing.
And they became huge.
They became huge.
Yeah.
And they're still doing really well. They're in the movie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I was really trying to... But see, I don't know that I was ahead of the curve. Dance music has been going on in the States for way longer than 90s. If you think back to disco and you think the late 70s and the German techno that came out.
In the States, it
had not become huge.
Right, right. And that's what I'm trying to say is like, and I mean, you know, even electronic music that was happening back in like early 80s and stuff like that, you could call that new wave, maybe put it in somewhat of the same category sometimes.
Sure.
But it was a total evolution into like the mid 90s to what it is now.
Marketers called it electronica, which drove me crazy because I'm like, I don't want to say that stupid shit. It's electronic music. I feel like saying electronica is betraying the genre because the genre has been here much longer than Fatboy Slim has.
Right. Right.
The genre has been here way longer than friggin' the Prodigy and the Chemical Brothers have.
Mm-hmm.
Even those bands are embarrassed to be whatever works to market and sell your records. But I do remember, I mean, those things kind of blew up. Fatboy Slim had a huge hit.
Yeah.
Moby started taking off. Right. There were a bunch of bands.
Moby was just on, like, I think Fallon.
Oh, Moby's
just the other
new
night,
record,
right?
Moby's new record is smoking.
Damian Jurado was
Damian
with him.
Damian Jurado sings on that Moby record.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Anyway, so, I mean, you know, yeah, it was ahead of its time. I got some flack from not only the dance community, but the mainstream community that just wasn't feeling me cramming this down people's throats, apparently. But whatever, I'm still proud of that. I still look at that, although it never took off. Huge. It never became the next movement. I'm still proud of that. I'm still proud of the fact that I was championing something that I believed in.
Yeah.
And that I thought was going to also challenge my listeners. And where I actually saw that work is we flew the Prodigy over to play Enfest. And I can remember this was before the internet, kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And internet and email addresses.
I was going to say, you just sounded like grandpa.
Exactly. We walked to school you had to walk uphill both ways. So I can remember that is when it finally clicked. At least for me, it clicked. And for an audience, and No Doubt was on that show, and friggin' Beck was on that show. It was a great end fest. And I literally remember, God, I've got a lot riding on this Prodigy thing because it cost us a crap load of money.
Was that before they made it
they had only had the
Firestarter or whatever?
Firestarter was the single, but the album hadn't come out.
So, yeah, so they didn't even have the video on MTV yet or anything like that?
No. That hadn't really taken off yet. And I'm like, God, I know this will work. I know. You know, the biggest question that I was met with from the promoter and my boss was, well, you think you should close the night? Because we kind of had this idea that at the end of the night, it needs to be a party. Like we had My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult 1 year, and they closed it out and slayed it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they weren't the headliner. They just closed it, and so many people got into it that it became the party at the end of the night. It became kind of the after party. And
so how did Prodigy do that?
Prodigy, so everybody's set was over, right? Uh-huh. No Doubt had just finished. They were the biggest band next to the Prodigy.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as No Doubt finishes, I see a mass exodus. Right. Moving up the hill, people are leaving Kitsap. And I'm like, hell no. Turn on that mic. And I literally go out on the stage in front of 15,000 people. I'm like, hold on. Stop. If you're leaving right now, I see you guys on the hill back there. Just listen to me for 2 seconds. Like, I'm pleading with the audience, with 15,000 people or however many people
at the Kitsap County Fairgrounds.
Kitsap County Fairgrounds. I'm like, if you leave. God. What's going to happen is this next artist is going to come out and you're going to be hearing about it all day tomorrow and reading about it in the papers, and you're going to be sorry.
Yeah.
So trust me, give them 10 minutes of your time. If you don't buy it, leave then. And it stopped.
I love this.
Everybody
I
stopped.
Love this.
Everybody stopped. I could literally see the crowd stop.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay, now get the hell off the stage because people are throwing lemons. So I left the stage and the Prodigy came out and slayed it. Mm-hmm. And the reason they slayed it, this group wasn't just an electronic group. This group had played headlining festivals like Reading and what's the other?
So it wasn't their first. It wasn't their first time.
They were
the
used
States.
To playing in front of audiences with 60,000 people in Rockin'
Right. Right. Okay.
So they came out and killed it.
Yeah.
You know, the singer Keith Flint was like on the shoulders of the security guys going through the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Beck came out on stage and danced. Everybody all of a sudden was like, holy shit. People are moshing to electronic music.
Yeah, yeah.
And it changed a lot of stuff. And we addressed that whole thing in the movie too.
It's
something that was one of my proudest moments, because to me, it was something that I believed in that I thought could work, and I prayed to God would work.
Yeah.
And it worked. And it went over
in
a big way. People still look back at that. Yeah.
You got it, man. Yeah. Well, I'm very excited. I'm very excited to see this movie. I'm very excited to go to the benefit show on Friday.
This Friday night,
yes.
Featuring Mary Lambert, The Young Evil, Sean Nelson.
Bunch of people we've had on this show.
Fences, yeah. Nacho Picasso, Ross Sion, and Daniel Blue doing this new ambient hip-hop thing.
Now, what's that? What are they called again?
Ross Sion.
Well, I know, but what?
And Daniel Blue?
Yeah. Didn't they have like a band name or something? They're not going by... Okay.
It's just Ross Zion. Gotcha. He's going by his name.
Okay.
The whole album's going to be like this. Tilson XOXO, IG88, again, this awesome electronic kid.
Yeah.
And DJ Action Jackson supplying the old school hip hop.
Awesome, man. Well, Friday Marco, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having
Friday me. Friday night, come and meet Marco. Come and watch him be embarrassed. At the first,
please don't leave. If you guys leave right now, you're gonna be sorry.
Yeah,
so embarrassing.
Oh my god. Oh, well, thank you so much, dude.
Wait, and are we gonna play this ruler kid? Or
should we? Yeah, should we?
So this kid. So here's something.
Okay.
With this show,
let's actually we'll close the show out with this.
Yeah.
With
so
rulers. Yeah.
Here's the thing. This we're literally IMing right now as we're recording.
Oh, cool.
This little box just popped up. So,
tell him that I'm going to put him on the show. And then,
I will. Yeah, you know, what the greatest thing about the job that I do is that you get to discover these brand new little artists.
Yeah,
and
totally.
To me, this is like one of those, I'm throwing this kid on to do a song onto this benefit show. And he'll probably do it after Fences because he's friends with Chris. I got turned on to this song the other day from Chris from Fences.
Right, right.
Sent this over and he's like, listen to this.
Yeah.
And I listened to it. I listened to it probably 10 times in a row and I was blown away. This kid recorded this. It's all him. Recorded it in a practice space and it's super percussive. The funny thing is I sent it to Jeremy Enick from Sunny Day and Jeremy was like, wow, that sounds familiar. And I'm like, yeah. And he was like, it's time for me to get back in the studio and record. And I'm like, yes, it is. I have to give this kid credit. Yeah, the scream sounds a little bit Sunny Day-ish in song, but he's got his own thing going on completely.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And he goes by the name of Ruler. And so you'll be seeing him play this song at the benefit as well.
All right. Well, thank you once again, sir. You can find out more about, Marco Collins and the Glamour and the Squalor movie that's coming out at their Facebook page. And you can also find it at glamoursqualorfilm.com.
And so, buy tickets for the benefit?
Yes. Get tickets now.
You can buy them brown paper bag. It's glamoursqualor.eventbrite.com.
Yes, sir.
No, wait.
Yes,
Eventbrite's not brown paper bag. Sorry. get your tickets. glamoursqualor.eventbrite.com.
Yeah. And if you can, help fund the movie by adding a couple bucks to the Kickstarter campaign as well, right?
Not
can
to
they,
the Kickstarter.
Oh,
you can't donate
do
on the event.
Oh, okay.
Page,
okay.
Though.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. That's great. Okay. Go visit that website. And you can find out more about us at www.air-raid.net. Also on CairoRadio.com. And please take the time, go to iTunes and take a couple seconds to rate and review this show. If you like what you hear, you can also go check out the archives and, listen to a bunch of episodes, 166 episodes, people, all there for your listening pleasure, all free. All we ask is that you tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your sister, and give her my address.
Congrats on your success, by the way. I know the show has grown. Like
it has. It has.
Pretty well.
I really appreciate that. You see that? Marco Collins likes the show. Why don't you?
What does Alan Stone think?
You a-holes. Not going to answer. I'm not going to answer that question. Sit down. Quit clapping. Jesus. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. This is Ruler, and we'll be back next week with more Air Raid podcast for you. We'll see you then. Have a good one, everybody. And everywhere you look, there's people, but there's no one there to help you. Shouldn't have sold your soul. Shouldn't have given up. Shouldn't have sold your soul. Shouldn't have given up. But it came to you like nothing at all. Oh, you can't.